there is a moment at which the sunshine and beauty of the wilderness changes. A flashpoint, if you will. Sometimes it's obvious, like when hikers or mountain climbers end up in a crevasse. And in your questioning of survivors, do you seek to nail down that moment?
Well, it often can be a moment that isn't even noticed. I mean, a wrong turn in the trail. It's not a great change in the weather. It's not any sort of dramatic thing. It's you make a wrong turn, you make another wrong turn, and the next thing you know, you don't know where you are. Sometimes.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. Well, oddly enough, a lot of the lost hiker stories are very similar in how they develop. Some of the other stories are much more dramatic. I mean, you step on the wrong spot of snow on Mount Rainier, and suddenly you're falling 120 feet into a crevasse.
These are the two guys who were trying to hike. Two rangers trying to hike to the top of Mount Rainier.
Exactly.
And they don't see it. And go right into it.
Yeah, they fell into 120 feet into a crevasse, and they were lucky. I mean, they were roped up, so the first man to fall, his fall was slowed a little bit by the rope, but the rope was 75 feet long. So he fell 75 feet, pulled the other guy in, and you know the snow was soft enough that they were able to survive that long of a fall.
They knew a little bit about the process by which a search gets initiated. And they knew when they said they were going to be back, and they knew that people would be looking for them, and sure enough, that happens. Maybe you can tell us a bit about how that happens, and also I'd like to get more into the technology.
Well, the important thing to do, and you know, I'm just as guilty as other people. I probably don't do it myself, but when you go out, tell people when you're going, where you're going, when you're coming back.
Dan Pontbriand says, plan your hike and hike your plan.
Which, you know, I'm a creative person, so that doesn't always work for me. But,
no, it doesn't, does it? You just want
to try to at least tell the people which drainage you're going to be in. And that's as close as I can get. But they were park employees, so they and when you're climbing Mount Rainier, it's a whole different ballgame. You tell people which route you're taking, and you're going to stick to that route. But that's all fine and dandy until you actually get in a helicopter and fly. Mount Rainier is a huge, huge mountain with thousands of crevasses. And when you suddenly realize you're trying to find one or two people on this huge mountain, it can be a whole different ballgame.
In fact, someone walked right by them and made a note of seeing an ice axe there, but didn't do anything.
Yeah, well, in climbing, as in a lot of things, this ranger had been all over the mountain, and he'd seen stuff everywhere, you know, old crampons, this and that, and when you're hiking and you're carrying a heavy pack and you're tired and you're suffering from oxygen deprivation, you're just like, oh, that's just that's an old ice axe there, no big deal. And he didn't realize it meant something until he got a call several days later.
The technology they use to find someone, to rescue someone, is amazing. Infrared sensors? Was that the one in Alaska?
Yeah, that was in Alaska. That's a technology that's been developed over the last couple of decades, and they can actually detect the signature of a human body over that of a bear or deer or plants, and it's often used in very heavy brush where you can fly over in a helicopter, but you can't see the ground.
Yeah. Is there something about survival that tends to sharpen one's ability to focus? You talk in this one situation, I think it was Mount Baker, where there was a group from Western Washington University and other folks who never met each other before, and all of a sudden, when there's someone to be saved, they click together.
Yeah. It was a spring day. A lot of people climbed. That's an easy access point, and there were probably a couple dozen people up there. And some of them were experienced. Some of them weren't. There happened to be a couple of people from Outward Bound that sort of led the whole rescue, and they were able to move very quickly because of the varying levels of experience. And it was really a miracle that they were able to save that mother and daughter.
Mother and daughter thought, "Why hike down? We've got these plastic bags, let's slide. We've done it before." They're sliding in plastic garbage bags or on top of them and get swallowed up.
I can totally understand that. I mean, it's an innocent enough thing. It's a spring day. There's snow. Slide and have fun. They weren't up on the glacier. They weren't at the high elevations. It just so happened in this one spot, there's a trap there. There's a melt hole in the snow where the snow pulls away from the cliff. There's water. There's a rushing water underneath there. And interestingly enough, in a period of about 3 years, six people were swept into that same location. One of them died. They were lucky. This mother and daughter were lucky enough to survive.
Thought they were dead. Well, the mom thought she was dead.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they should have died.
The folks involved in the helicopter crash built a little igloo out of snow and used parts of the crash helicopter to create the shelter in Alaska. Juneau, it's an ice field, is it?
It's this where they crashed. They were flying off the Juneau ice field, following one of the glaciers down into the valley. And because of a combination of flat light, anybody that's skied up on Crystal Mountain on a foggy day knows that suddenly you can't see bumps, you can't see anything. Well, this happened on a larger scale. Helicopter augured down into the glacier, and these people were left with basically light clothing like you'd wear as a regular tourist and their point-shoot cameras on a glacier in Alaska.
And they're from California.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But yet they something in them says, hey, this is survival. Let's start digging.
I think it's human instinct. I think it's something that we still have, something that's been passed down over the ages. And, you know, it's sort of you need shelter. You know that just from instinct.
Yeah. That was the quote I had. And it's from the book Swallowed Up. Somehow. This is about the ones who got swallowed up. Mm-hmm. Somehow this thrown together group of strangers clicks immediately and begins to work as a well-trained rescue squad. And there's something else about that. It brings out the very best in people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's, it's a human thing, but there's something about Americans. They love, you know, when they're needed, coming to the rescue. I mean, I don't know, what is it, Superman or superheroes or that kind of ethic, but they seem to want to do that.
Well, the perfect example in this area and in Juneau, as people read in the book, there are volunteers, and I've said this before, who right now are waiting for you to get lost because they want to come and help you. And these people will risk life and limb to come and save you. So if you're going to get lost anywhere, the Pacific Northwest is great. Juneau is probably the best place.
Because of the
because there are so many volunteers who are experienced in mountain travel, and they can come. They'll come and get you.
I think we've seen the bumper sticker, support, search, and rescue, get lost. You've not seen that, okay.
No, that's a good line. I'll have to remember that.
One. Now, you know, another thing about the book is there seems to be a balance of earth and fire and water, snow, the different kinds of terror. Mm-hmm. Did you seek that out, and did you kick out other stories because you had too many, say, avalanche stories?
Well, yeah, there were a few. I mean, I tried to, what I really wanted to do was get a good variety of stories from the different types of sports, and I wanted to cover the landscape of the Pacific Northwest, and of course, you have different conditions in Idaho and Eastern Oregon, where it's dry and hot, than you do from the coast of Washington, where you have rainforests. And I just wanted that variety.
Yeah. And now let's talk a little bit about my story. You know,
okay.
I've already talked about this on the show, and you know, I get people telling me, "Hey, have you been like yesterday?
Yeah.
You know, you haven't been in the woods again, have you?" And of course I have. You know, I'm not going to bushwhack solo. Yeah. You know, but yeah. You know, I guess you can tell someone if they've been in the wilderness when they ask those kinds of questions, because the people who've been in the wilderness realize it can happen pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It can happen very easy, but it's funny. I like the fact that you bring that point up, because one thing that many of these people, some admit, some won't admit, but when these things happen to them, the first thing they think of is they're really embarrassed. I mean, they might be hanging from their fingertips on a cliff, but the first thing is it's like, I'm so embarrassed. It's like they don't want people to know. They just want to be able to. It just kills me that somebody is at death's door and the first thing they think of is the embarrassment.
I'm really sorry. You know, that was the first thing I said when the radio came down on that rock in Scheffel Creek. The first thing I want to say is, I apologize. I'm sorry I put you through this because of my stupidity. And they're like, hey, they didn't say it in so many words, but we're happy we don't have to look for your dental records. Basically, that's what it is.
The Rangers are always happy to bring back a live person that really makes their day. And I say in the introduction to the book that it's really easy to judge somebody's, you know, panicky situation is the result of pure stupidity. And I tell you what, I'd be careful judging, because you could be next on the list.
It could happen to you. The amount of space that you dedicated to my story seemed to be a lot longer than the average story in the book.
I liked your story in particular because there wasn't really any point where you were, fighting to keep your head above water. I thought of it more of a meditation on how you get lost by degrees, because you know it was I really liked following your story on how, you know, at first you knew where you were, no problem, you're hiking along, then you meet these people and they kind of take you over here, maybe you weren't planning to go there but you're still fine, and then you're over here and you still know where you are, and then it's like, well, you think you know where you are, and if I just go farther I know I'll know where I are, and then all of a sudden it's like, uh-oh, I'm lost.
I'm screwed now. That's basically the way it is, yes. Yeah, you start thinking, I better start rationing food and putting up the SOS and doing the things. But you cover the story very, very well. And a great map in there, a great resource for me to show people. You want to know about the story here, just read this. So
we felt the maps were key to several of the stories because it's kind of hard to follow in text, you know, when people are crossing all these different ridges. And it's a key part of the story.
And the other thing about the maps come early in the story. So page two or whatever of the story, you'll see the map. And it's like you're following around and all of a sudden encounters bear here or encounters cougar here. You know, wait a second, I better read this one. There's a question about wilderness. You brought this up a little bit in the last segment, but tell us about the value of wilderness as a resource for people.
Well, I've traveled, I haven't traveled all over the world, but I've been enough places in the world to know that, and I don't want to sound too corny, but the landscapes we have in the Pacific Northwest and in the West in general are unlike anywhere else. And I can't think of any other culture that has preserved wild country like we have. And I think it's something I can see a long ways into the future. It's something that we really need to struggle to preserve because there's no other place like the places we have here.
And what is it about those places that's so valuable to people?
Well, a lot of writers have tried to approach this topic and try to describe what the value of wilderness is. And for me, I like going into the woods because it's a very simple life. I know the rules. It's just nature in general. It just feels like a very relaxed place. It feels like the place that I'm really meant to be. And there's a sense of freedom as well. You're not constrained by traffic or cars or people. And it's almost like you can breathe easier and live easier. And I think we're always going to need those places to escape to. And if we don't preserve them and make them even larger than they are now, all we're going to have are picture books to look back at.
Any sense we're going to get a follow-up on some of these stories? Because I'm left at the end of some of these stories thinking, I want to know more about what happened. How's the guy's eye, for instance, the guy who had his eye socket shattered, you know?
Well, I try to put a little epilogue into all these stories because often you read a story like this and they were rescued and then you don't get to hear afterwards. And
the man with the toe, you got to tell the toe story.
Well, he did recover. You know, he had extreme frostbite to his legs. They thought he was going to lose his toes, if not his lower legs. He was lucky enough to have a doctor in Kellogg, Idaho, of all places, who just coincidentally happened to be there, who was studying barometric medicine. And it uses pressure to bring circulation back into your legs.
Was it a hyperbaric chamber?
Hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah. So Michael Jackson, if anyone gets frostbite, he's pretty much
I never made that connection, but I'll have to think about it.
Sorry about that.
Anyway, it saved this young boy's legs. He was 16 at the time. Now he's in his 20s. He lives here in Seattle. And he says that every morning when he wakes up, he can still feel the pain. And it tells him that, yeah, he gets to live today.
There's a quote that you like to end your sessions with. So why don't you take time to do that?
Yeah, it's a quote that didn't make it into the final edition, but I think it really sums up the emotions that a lot of these people had once they were able to survive what they were going through. And it's from Henry David Thoreau. Not till we are lost, in other words, not until we have lost the world, do we begin to find ourselves and realize the infinite extent of our relations. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for being on the show.
It was my pleasure.
Good luck with the work. If this is your first book, then you've got a very distinguished career ahead of you.
Thank you very much.
Panic Rising is the book. True life survival tales from the great outdoors. Our guest has been Brett Nunn. He's a geologist turned writer. And if you'd like more information on the book, you can look it up on the web, sasquatchbooks.com.